Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Tonight's topic, we're going to discuss the missing Christian missionaries in Haiti and what's going on in the nature of that country. And also Colin Powell died today, and I want to discuss a little bit about his role in the Kuwait War, the first Iraqi War, and how the perspective on the Middle East has changed since then. So I'm going to play this clip from YouTube. It's actually from Headline News, but one moment, please.
Somewhere in Haiti, 17 people, including children, snatched by gangs on their way home from an orphanage yesterday. The Washington Post reported one of the kidnapped messaged for help in a WhatsApp group. NBC News has not seen or verified this message. We've reached out to the Christian Aid Ministries and haven't heard back. The abduction happening here in Port-au-Prince, the capital of Haiti. Already the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, Haiti has been plunging into ever deeper chaos. Thousands fleeing their homes in recent months and seeking safety at the U.S. southern border. In July, the country's president, Jovenel Moise, was assassinated in his home. Two Americans and 15 Colombians arrested as part of the murder plot. With the government divided and the economy cratering, much of Port-au-Prince has fallen to armed gangs who outgun and outfight police. And amid the anarchy, kidnapping is a booming industry. Men, women, and children snatched at gunpoint for as little as $100. At least 328 people kidnapped in the first 8 months of 2021. That's compared to 234 for all of 2020, according to the UN. Most of the victims are Haitians, but foreigners make a tempting target for those hoping for greater ransoms. A race now to find these people of faith and bring them home safely. Now, NBC News has reached out to the State Department. We have not yet heard back, but in a statement to the Washington Post, the State Department says, "We are aware of these reports and have nothing additional to offer at this time." Willie?
Americans trying to help in Haiti. Let's hope for their safe return. Raf Sanchez, thank you very much.
Hey, that's it. So, yeah, we have three callers on the line now. Suzette was the first to call in. Thank you, Don and John, for being prompt, because we're only doing an hour to an hour and 15 minutes tonight due to Don's travel plans. Hi, Suzette. How are you doing tonight?
Hello. I'm doing all right. Thank you. Got back yesterday from my trip up north.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about that, too. Let me pull in the other. Let me pull in the other people, and then we can discuss it.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, Don. Are you all packed for your trip?
Yeah, I'm prepared now. I'm preparing now. It's been a long day, meetings and stuff that I had to get done with so that I can get ready for this. But I'll be gone for 2 weeks, and for me, that's pretty long.
Yeah, that's a long time. Don't
just
forget
for
to
vacation,
stop in Minnesota.
Yeah,
you can talk about your trip, too, after we cover what Suzette was doing. Hi, John.
No,
thanks for calling in, even though you're in the middle of cleaning.
Hello, Jane.
So thanks for calling in. So we have a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of stuff in the headline news. I already played the clip on the missionaries, and Colin Powell died either yesterday or today. And we can get into that in a little while. Suzette, why don't you tell John, Don, and me what you were up north for? I have a good idea.
Oh, well, it was a Convention of States strategy meeting for the California team and how we are going to work on getting our state legislature to pass the Fifth Amendment to join the other, states that we have now. And I've been working on it for like 10 years and as far as California and the rest of the 49 states. And so we're hoping that things will pick up. Momentum is gaining in other states, so that's good as far as legislatures, state legislatures coming aboard. And we need 2/3 in order
and
to
what is the goal, the ultimate goal?
The Convention of States, you have to have state legislatures, 2/3 of each of the 50 states. And then we present that to Congress, and Congress has to look at the demands that we're basically asking for, or demanding, I guess, which is term limits, the budget, as far as they're gaining control back so we don't, you know, our spending is ridiculous. And then the third one was, gosh, my head is just exploding right now, the budget, the term limit, and just taking back control, because the federal government has overreaching powers, and that's got to stop. And so basically, and each state that comes aboard, so each of those 15 states all agreed on the three demands. They can't add any more. They can't take away any of the three. They have to agree on the three. So 2/3 of 50 states have to agree on those three things before it can be proposed to Congress, to the federal government. And then they can debate it and pass it, but then it still has to be ratified by the states. So it's a process,
but
we have to get control. Yeah. We still, you know, it's ridiculous. The spending that is out of control, we're in the trillions. We're going down the hole really fast as far as that goes. And the term limits we think will help, so that this way we don't have people there that are basically from cradle to grave. And when that happens, you get corruption that happens because you have little cliques that develop, and then they start plotting and, you know, conjuring up stuff and forgetting about the American people, and the lobbyists take control, and basically they're not representing the people anymore. So term limits are very important. So anyway, that's what we discussed.
Don, do you have anything to add since you're in the legislative arena?
Yeah, just a couple things. First of all, this is for a constitutional amendment, right?
constitutional convention but we're using the Fifth Amendment to bring it before Congress.
Okay. Yeah, just be careful because it has to be a strict limit on the number of points that you have to bring up. One of the things that the constitutional conventions are people who are against them are that some people will start bringing up anything. and everything.
Right.
And
well,
they,
that's why the state legislatures have to pass exactly what those demands are. And so we have three, and that's it, you know, no more and no less. And they all have to agree on those three.
You're going to have to go work hard on that. If you've only got 15 and you've been working on it for 10 years, I've been working on the ERA.
She's in a group of people, and she's been doing it for several years, I think, Don.
Right, well, I've been doing the ERA.
It's not something that it wasn't just like a weekend convention type of deal.
No,
haven't you been working on it for like 2 years?
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
Well, I've been
2 years. People have been working on
it.
It
kind of reminds me of one of the topics of COVID is like Minnesota has a record number of evictions now in the court dockets because some organizations or government service was supposed to bail people out as far as late rent, especially those who lost their personal job. And now I guess a lot of people are waiting, like those people who are about to be evicted are telling the courts they're waiting on this government service or that government service to provide them the check they promised 6 months ago, and then the eviction won't take place. So, I mean, part of that debt process is what I'm trying to illustrate.
Yeah.
Well, I don't, they should be homeowners, and they won't have to worry about that. But what I wanted to mention is that the Equalized Amendment, I've been working on the ERA all half my life, and so it still hasn't been ratified. So it's a long, long process, sometimes a lifetime. That's all I wanted to mention.
Oh, you know how that goes as far as the long process. You're absolutely right. Nothing gets done quickly, and especially if it's going to be done right. But, yeah, things in Washington move real slow.
Hey, Don, why don't you tell John and Suzette where you're going tomorrow and why?
Yeah, I'll be waking up here at 4 o'clock for a 5:15 flight to Mississippi to visit my brother. He bought some property down there, and he's got a parcel that he might want to give or sell to me, and I'll go down and take a look. I've got
part of his dental.
Okay, you're really sleepy, Jane. A parcel.
I thought you said a partial, like half his mouth.
No, parcel as in property purchase.
I get it. It's just that I worked 8 hours on my feet. I'm a little punchy.
Oh, my goodness. I bet you're tired.
No, I actually worked 14 hours, but out of the 14 hours, 8 of it was standing up, boxing cards for Hallmark.
You're tired.
Yeah, you sound a little sleepy. Or
so you're
going to
buy a parcel in one of the poorest states of the country? I don't see you as a Mississippian.
That'd be a vacation.
You'd probably be lynched in a week with your big mouth.
Yes, I would. That's why I've never been there. That's why I don't go down to the
You better watch your step. It's still a racist state.
Well, and the thing is, though, is that most of the places down there, I guess average the cities are 60% black. So when then, you know.
Yeah, that's true. It has more black people than white.
Mm-hmm. So I'll be very careful going down there because, as I said, I already know. In my youth, I had no problem telling people where to go, no matter where I went. But I'm getting older now. I'm not trying to become confrontational like that. But I'll be going down for 2 weeks, and this is one of the longer trips I make, but I needed the vacation to get my rest, to get my brain straight, because there have been a lot of things that have been going on since COVID, and it's knocked me out of my regular rhythm. I'm normally very active, very in politics and everything else. And this last 2 years, a lot of things have been suspended or delayed, and so I've been a lot less active than I normally am, and it's not good. I'm used to the pressures of deadlines and activity and research and everything. So I've got to get back into the swing of things, and this next year is going to be huge because of things like
you haven't really done much since the election as far as real jobs.
Exactly. And we had our legislative session earlier this year, but except for those things, it's been relatively inactive, postponing events. I've got events that I put together that have been postponed for 2 years now. I just had a meeting with our law enforcement, our police today, Pat and I, and we brought that up. It's that we have not had an opportunity to have our symposiums, our community symposiums with the police, block parties, things like that. But I do keep my Martin Luther King caravan going. So that's one thing that I have not let go since we drive in our cars alone. So that didn't have to have COVID protocols. But other than that, it's been a very slow couple of years, and it's time for me to break out and do my thing.
Well, great. Good for you.
Are you going to be staying with your brother the whole time?
No, I'll be doing I'll be renting a car early next week. This week I'll be just kind of hanging out. I have a cousin who lives in Jackson, so I'll be down with her for a couple of days, her and her husband. They live on the lake. And then I'll go visit my brother for a couple of days in the next couple of days when I get there. And then next week I'll rent a car and I'll be all over the place. I plan on traveling all over Mississippi and possibly
maybe you should
go
to Vicksburg and look at the Civil War stuff.
No,
oh,
I'm sure I'll
be nice.
There. No, I'm sure I'm going there. I'll be taking a look at a lot of the Civil War relics and the slave quarters, and you know, like I say, I go to the museums in Ohio and Atlanta, and you really can feel the pain and agony in the buildings and all the artifacts. You can just tell.
Jones went
to
the Civil Rights Museum in Atlanta. My twin sister.
Yeah, they've got buildings, slave quarters, the holding cells, and you can, I mean, they scrub them as best they can, but there is so much blood that was in them that you can still smell the blood in the buildings. It's really a trip, but nobody can imagine the pain and agony and death that the slaves endured. It's really impossible to understand. But I'll be going there to see the battlegrounds and things like that. I never did like the South. I never liked the South because I walk through the woods, you go through the towns, and again, I can feel the vibes of death and
of the past,
agony,
yeah,
of the past. You can, you know, there are ghosts there. Which,
I believe that.
My friend Daria went to the Gettysburg fighting grounds, and they have tour guides and ghost sightings and stuff like that there.
Yep,
and I bet.
I went to we had a family reunion at a hotel that was a former medical unit in Indianapolis. It had ghosts in there. You could feel the spirits walking around.
That's sacred ground.
She took pictures at Gettysburg, and there was a face. It was an orb, but it looked like a face, and it was kind of weird looking. But it looked like something that could have been an orb of a face.
Yeah. Wow.
They're all around, but you have to be very perceptive and cognizant of them. And, you know,
how you couldn't be, though, there, because I'm sure that it's very strong, you know.
People are not aware of anything. Most people aren't aware of anything. That's why it's hard for them, you know, to believe in anything other than themselves. But if you're really astute as to
well, I'm a Christian and I'm in touch with God.
That's God, but I'm talking about other spirits. You live, Jane, in Duluth. You should be very aware of the Indian history and all of the pain and suffering that the
I work
indigenous.
With a girl from, she's like probably 25 to 30. She's from the Red Lake Reservation. She just moved to Duluth in July. The Red Lake Reservation's in the middle of nowhere in northern Minnesota. I haven't really had a chance to talk to her, but she looks like she came straight out of the 1800s. I mean, she's so native-looking. Like, there's no mixed blood there.
Well, I probably
sound ignorant saying that, but she's a pure native. She's not mixed with anything.
Well, that's all right.
And I'm sure her parents have lived a traditional life up there, because if you guys look at the Minnesota map, Upper Red Lake and Lower Red Lake, it's two of the biggest lakes in the state. They're huge. And no white man is allowed on that reservation without permission.
Well, that's the point.
So
you
have to get permission. That's one of the few ones where they're 100% autonomous.
Well, you heard, Jane, even, you know, being a Christian, that sometimes spirits get stuck, you know, that they have unfinished business here, and or if they've been tortured, tortured souls, that until they receive justice, their souls, you know, stay here. They haven't been, you know, offered
right.
that life to
I'm
go
a,
in, or they can
I'm
receive.
A born-again Christian. I've been saved since I was 4. And then my daughter died on Christmas Day, 92, so... And I'm also an identical twin, so I have a sixth sense. And I can sense a lot of things, not just death. But there's been times where I predicted the future on certain items.
Well, that's what
I will be out there in California for Christmas. So I was hoping John and I can come and see Suzette and Albert.
You've got a lot of tortured souls up in Duluth. You should be able to feel those people.
We've had an unseasonably warm fall. It's usually like 40 or 50 this time of year, and it was 70 today. And we've usually have our first snowfall by like October
15th. What's that got to do with spirits? The tortured souls.
Because we're tortured because it's cold. That's what it has to do with.
They're
tortured
because
it's cold here.
Okay.
They're dead. They're just souls. They're tortured from their past pain when they existed here on Earth. Not the cold.
Exactly.
And speaking of slavery, that was maybe an insult, but standing on my feet 8 hours packing boxes at Hallmark feels like slavery. It's torture.
Why do you think so many people are quitting their jobs? People are quitting their jobs.
This is my third job, and I like my other two jobs so much I don't want to quit them, so now I'm being tortured because I have to make a decision.
But you don't need
three
jobs.
And John and I were talking about that right before the show started.
You don't need three jobs, Jane. That's
I know, Daddy.
Okay.
I need one sugar daddy.
Well, that's all right. Most women have them. They're called husbands.
Well, I'm 61, and I don't.
Well, you got Broom Boy. He'll get
on
the money.
He's on hold. I put him on hold. He's in the...
Uh-huh.
Broom Boy's in the doghouse.
Well, last time we talked to you, you were giving a booty call.
Shh. We didn't. No, I was. Shut up. We're not discussing my personal business on the air.
We did.
Okay.
Last week. Anyway,
that was 9 or 10 days ago.
Okay.
So let's okay. keep it. Let's keep it serious, Don.
All right. Hi, John.
John's cleaning
greetings.
The shower.
Greetings, fellow grieving patriots. And, I have some thoughts on what you said, trying to venture down a relationships, you have situations where you feel wrong, like why keeps on.
You've been talking about relationships a lot, and by the way, your phone's dipping in and out, but we'll let you know if it gets bad. Go ahead, John.
So, in relationships, human behavior, we're all sinners, so sooner or later, we will do something that offends the other person, your girlfriend, your wife, your kids, your neighbor, your uncle, whatever. So it's impossible to live life without offending someone. So you have to come up with a method of forgiveness. Now, Don was talking about spirits and about people. And the Bible talks about the sins of the parents going from generation to generation, the generational curses. Things that go down, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 generations or longer. And some people feel spiritually you need to break the curse or confront the spirit, you know, exercise the spirit, the demon, whatever you would call it. But I have a feeling on this, and that is if you talk to any therapist, they're going to say you have to have, you know, there's a pain, you know, there's like shock, pain. And then you begin this process of healing, like of accept. There's negotiation, like you negotiate if I had done this or done that, this would have been dead when it died or whatever. And then you begin to come to grips. You begin to acceptance, and then you heal because you're wounded. And then you go on. You might have a scar, but you don't every day for the rest of your life go, I have this cut or this gash in my arm, and I keep lifting the scab and bleeding every day. And there's a certain point where you tell that person, stop.
I do know people like that, though, that are trapped in their past, John.
Right, like stop tearing the bandage off. Stop ripping the wound open. You want it to heal. You want to move forward. So the question I have is, how are people healing with this when they're grieving offenses that didn't happen to them, right? Like if I have a problem with my girlfriend, I go.
Are you talking about how Don is going to explore what's going on in the South, but he's never truly experienced it firsthand?
Right, and what I'm saying, it's good to revisit. It's good for me to remember my grandmother had a rare heart condition, and she died, you know, and Stanford was trying to cut her up and experiment on her, and God did some incredible stuff, and angels visited her, and she told us that God was coming to take her, and they did. It is good to never forget. It's good to remember sad, you know, like when my wife cheated on me and broke up our and we divorced. I want to remember my past, and I may reflect on it on an anniversary, but if every day I spend, you know, my time mourning and wanting her to pay me back and to wrong the justice. Now, that's one issue. But now imagine I'm talking to my girlfriend and I go, you know, your great-great-great-grandfather did such to my great-great-grandfather, maybe. I'm not too sure. And I just can't deal with this injustice. And she's going to go, honey, like, let's live life. I have nothing
okay,
to
I
do
have,
with this.
I want to bring. I want to respond to what you're saying briefly. Okay, so I'm at work today, and you know, it's the holiday rush already. I want to tell you guys a few things because I'm gonna fade probably pretty soon. Hallmark. I work at Hallmark Business Connections. We're probably the only one in the country. The main headquarters is in Kansas City, Missouri. So 95% of our business, for the business part, goes to Edward Jones. It's the financial investment firm, and they order there's firms, like there's little outlets all over the country that they order Thanksgiving, Christmas cards, sympathy cards, birthday cards, all this stuff for their clients year-round. So, like, one of the orders today was, like, 5,000 cards for, like, a cluster of these Edward Jones outlets. Well, there's a lady that I was working with. There's, like, 50% of the people there who are there this time of year are temps. And I said, what do you normally do when you're not being a temp? She said, I'm a licensed therapist, but I left my business temporarily because I was overwhelmed by the number of customers I had that had family members die of COVID. They wouldn't be able to attend the funeral. Sick people who had COVID, they couldn't go to the hospital. And I got burnt out on my clients because they had unsolvable problems. So she basically she's my age. She has gray hair, but I dye mine blonde. She's walking around stuffing up, you know, doing pick tickets and filling up cards instead of using her license to help people because she can't handle it anymore. So I think John's trying to say two things, that you shouldn't be too attached to your grief that you're going to dwell on it the rest of your life. Because my daughter died she died in 92, so I don't know how many years ago that was, probably like around 25, or no, it was around 30, I don't know. But anyways, if I spent the rest of my life dwelling on that, then I'd probably be a really sad soul. Like, I wouldn't allow that God to have the victory. But I don't think it's wrong for Don John to go look at his historical history of the black man. Since he talks about it all week, he might learn something new there.
Right, but my point being is we want to be healthy individuals. And what I'm not hearing from the black community and the Hispanic community and other communities, no one's saying, because we do this in therapy. We do this in real life. Like, your kid comes home crying, right, about something. You go, why are you upset? Well, because, you know, 100 years ago, someone killed kids that had blonde hair, or, you know, the kid got raped. But you go, son, okay, first you confront the problem, the grievance, and then you deal with it, and then you heal and you go on. Like you don't have to have nightmares every night, son. You know, you can find a way to move forward. And what I don't see with this community, people aren't telling you how we're going to fix this and how to heal. They're just saying, I'm upset. You know, white man bad.
I understand what you're saying, but maybe you're in a different phase of your life than other people are. Like, maybe you didn't have a hard year last year with COVID, and maybe Don did. Like, I know some personal things Don's gone through lately that he hasn't said on the air. So, what do you think of what? First, I'll have Suzette go, because I think she's got a left. She's less subjective because she doesn't know us three as well as all of us know each other. What do you think John's trying to say, Suzette?
I think maybe he's trying to say, I think she's actually approaching this from a different angle, and maybe even the wrong angle for what Don is going through. And I say that just because he's comparing it to relationships and basically let bygones be bygones and live your life. You know, don't dwell on the past because, you know, you've got life to live. And so move on and be happy, you know, deal with it and make peace with it and move on. But that's not the same thing what Don is going to, you know, go to experience. Basically, he's going to go experience, you know, I don't know, ancestry or you know, just like if I were to go to my hometown or home grounds or whatever and visit certain places, and they may have nostalgic, you know, memories for me or not. Some places are sacred, some places aren't. It's basically to go and experience. It's not to dwell, but to experience is what I think Don is going for, or will be going for, basically, when he arrives and visits those places, but not necessarily to dwell on the past, because clearly he's moving on, you know, as far as trying to make change today, and make a better world for people with that change. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a good assessment, Suzanne, because for the most part, I don't have time to dwell on anything. I've been to the South quite a bit, and these are the feelings that I get. That's all. I'm not dwelling on anything. I just know that when I visit the museum or go in some of the woods or move on some of the terrain, I feel things, and I feel that those things are not always happy things. So that's what I'm pretty much talking about, John. And you know that there's nothing to dwell on, but there is that saying: if you don't understand history, you're doomed to repeat it. And so if you don't understand history, you're doomed to repeat it over and over and over again, like Groundhog Day. And that's something I don't ever want to do.
And sometimes things creep up, you know, like Lauren's been gone almost a year, and I find different methods of coping with it. Like I send him Snapchat videos, and then he sends me answers back, and that helps. But one day I was sitting at Hallmark, and not sitting, standing, because I'm already standing, but I was filling order, and I'm surrounded by all these Thanksgiving and Christmas cards, and there was a Christmas card with a poinsettia on it, and my mom, every year at Christmas, my mom would order poinsettias in somebody's name, and then, you know, like a relative, a dead relative, and then one year, when Lexi died, they ordered one for her, like the following year. And then I just kind of like almost burst into tears because I was thinking about those poinsettias and how at the Lutheran Church, a lot of people order poinsettias in remembrance of people. And sometimes you're not even thinking about a memory and it just springs up in your head.
Exactly. And so, but you can't. You know, you don't necessarily dwell on it for days and weeks and months.
Right, like it's something I hadn't thought about in years, and then all of a sudden I just remembered that my mom ordered plants at Christmas time to remember certain people in the family. It could be a relative from a long time ago. It didn't have to be just my experience. So, John, I think what you're trying to say is that just try to keep things balanced and don't dwell on failures.
No, actually,
I think that's
what I'm trying to say. I'm saying several things more than that. What I'm saying is that it's great. I did mention it's great to look at history. It's great to remember traumatic things. I said that. I was very clear, like your divorce, someone dying in your family, your country being assaulted 9/11. I've said that. What I'm saying is that there's three things that aren't happening. You never hear all these places. How are we going to resolve this? How are we going to heal this? Also, understand every day, we're reminded every day, white privilege, every day, oh, we've been oppressed. Oh, we don't have any opportunities. And what I'm saying is it's unhealthy. It's like me saying, I'll tell you something more major. I'm 5'6". Do you know the prejudice against people that aren't 6 foot or 6'5"? Do you know when we walk into a restaurant, Slick is 6'5". He sits down, and I've done it in the corner. I've watched as girls walk in, and they would, when he was in his heyday, they would tap each other on the shoulder, and one would whisper in their ear, and then they would smile, and they would giggle, and because it's like, oh, here's the stud. And if you do survey studies, just look at the research. The bias against the male under 6 foot is incredible. It affects everything in your life. Sports, job opportunities. As you know, the person who wins the presidency is usually the tallest guy, almost always. The most successful people are the tall people, the good-looking people. So what I'm saying is it's unhealthy as a country when all we do every day, every commercial, every show, every sitcom, we've got to wail about how underprivileged people are in America because of the color of their skin. And I'm saying, where is anyone saying, let's heal? Like, okay, what is your grievance? Oh, my grievance is that someone died 100 years ago. Okay, did you die? No. Did your parents die? No. How can I resolve that for you? It's in therapy that go, okay, John, every day I go, I've already talked about on the show, I'm 5'6", and it sucks because it's harder to, I have to be very successful and have a lot of money to pick up on girls or to be attractive to women. I don't talk about it. I say, go out and be successful and just live the American dream. That's my point.
What you just went over was the white privilege or privilege. It's the media, it's the mass consciousness, let me put it like that. That's been going on forever. It's true what you said, what you just said. It's true that people who are under a certain height are discriminated against. That's what they call it. That's why they call it the Napoleonic complex. But you can't dwell on that. You have to hone your best talents, your best skills, and that's how you live through life. And that's what you did, you know, until your properties were gone. And then you went back to square one almost. Well, not really. You still had your condo. But, you know, the thing is that you had to go back because the skills were the things that hit you, you know, in particular you. But it wasn't because you were 5'6". It was because the skills that you had, the inordinate skills that you had, were hit by the business climate. But you know, everybody has a deficiency. Even people who are 6'5", they have deficiencies. Most of them because they got no brain. Most of those people that you're talking about, the 6'2", 6'5" guys, they're dumb as rocks. So, you know, they depend on their privileged status of being 6'5". Maybe they played basketball. Maybe they played soccer. Maybe they were athletic. Maybe they had a leg up in life. But everybody's got negative points, and they've got to, live off of their strength. It's hard to do. It's hard to do, but people can do it if they know what their strengths are. Hello?
Oh, I was just listening, that's all. Well, and to your point, all I'm saying is people of power use this to divide. They use it to spend all our time.
That's exactly what they do.
Instead of everyone collectively moving forward. And you know, again, it's human nature. Women want to breed with the tallest, strongest guy. And he gets smarter also, too. And that's biology. It's just it's animal kingdom. And you look at the animal kingdom, alpha dog. The weakest, we have ducks, and there would be one stud duck, and there'd be four or five other ducks that weren't stud, and they wanted to mate with the other, and the stud duck would stop them and wouldn't allow it. And these guys, that's when they almost were gay. They'd start humping each other because they had no one else to hump. And you look in the lion kingdom, if a lion have a pride, and a stronger lion comes along, you know what he does? He kills the other male.
The other.
Then he kills violently all his children, his pride.
Right.
And then he rapes the lioness. And you know what she does? she follows him. It's like, oh, this is my new guy. Like, you know, in real life, you know, a woman would go like, kill all my children. I'll stick a knife in you when you go to bed. No, she follows him like, this is the new guy. This is the strong guy, and I'm going to have stronger kids for this. And, you know, daddy, you know, mom's ready for the next round.
That's what I'm talking about in terms of human, in terms of nature. I look at the, when I make my contentions on the black superiority, or you know, in general, just to where who we come from. We all come from Africa. When I make those contentions, I'm not making them just for pie in the sky theories. These are things where what you just mentioned, they happen. The strength comes out. It's the parent who is the leader or alpha or whatever you want to call it. And in general, if given a chance, the African is the alpha almost anywhere. You know, look at the Shakespeare and Othello and a lot of the places where there is a power struggle without villains. Usually the darker skin prevails. Genes. You know, when you have genes, the darker genes prevail. And that's just nature. So when I'm making those theorems, I'm not just making them from, you know, pulling shit up from the air. These are things that are apparent and seem to be universal. Did the ladies go to sleep?
They did. They're looking through their Chippendales catalog of black men.
Yep. Exactly.
The problem is, you know, then guys like Yao Ming comes along, you know, the 7'4" Chinese guy. Or you have, now here's another thing, is that confidence. It does. You could be 5'6", you could be Jeff Bezos or Adolf Hitler or Bruce Lee or whoever, they're 5'6". One testicle, by the way, Hitler, one testicle, Bruce Lee, by the way. Yet alpha as heck. And the world, you know, they have, like Napoleon, they have the little man's complex. So if you act like you're 6'5", women are attracted to that too. Now, obviously, the physical is the first thing. But when women, they will be attracted to the alpha in stature. But then after talking 5 minutes, they'll go, well, maybe he's stupid or he's just an abuser or whatever. And the 5'6" guy who's confident and smart and has his game together, she will overlook all of that. You know, it's a little different. Whereas the animal kingdom, it's kind of hard to schmooze that way because they kill each other. You know, and it's civilized. We're supposed to be civilized, so that knocks some of that equation out. But I would say, I don't know. Like, are other races like Chinese or Hispanic, Eskimos, are we from blacks? Are we filtered down? Are we a totally different group setting? Or in other words, like a small dog, you know, like a chihuahua or something. It's not a wolf. Did it come from the wolf line? And is it, you know, is it advanced or is it inferior? These are questions to ask. Or
yes. The answers are yes. The wolf is the father or grandfather or whatever, patriarch of all dogs. You know, and certain most species come from an original species, pterodactyls or something. I forgot what it is. There's a raptor that was a little bird that was mostly earthborn. It couldn't fly, but it was. It was the first bird with wings. and the skeleton that had the chest bone that allowed for flapping. You know, these are all from an original source, and those original sources are where we derive our studies on what comes after, even though, you know, there may be a certain amount of genes that have changed, but those, in general, if you keep looking, those genes are the same. But those the original people have the same genes, in the majority of the same genes as we do now. So there is an origin. There is a natural origin of all species that can be derived, at, historically studied and categorized from an original source.
Well, true. But now here's something to consider, Dr. or Professor Don. Let's go with that premise because we want to learn and educate ourselves. So let's go with the alpha. And let's say the wolf is the top of the chain, right? And little chihuahua or whatever, or the poodle is at the bottom end, right? And then let's say in humanity, the African-American male is the alpha, is the most dominant. And then at the bottom of the line might be some little Mexican guy or whatever the race. Or a little Asian guy, right? You know, here's the question, though. In civilized life, do we use the wolf in practical applications, or do we use the German Shepherd, the Labrador, the Collie, the whatever, the sheepdog? Because the problem with the wolf, it's too wild. You can't domesticate it. You can try, but it has those wild traits that won't lend itself to be you don't see a blind man working with the wolf. You don't see wolf being a care dog, a service dog. They're too wild. So the question is, in a civilized society, you may have Kobe, you may have black players. Now, Kobe was pretty smart, decently smart. But you've got the most NBA guys, extremely talented, but they didn't even know how to speak English because they had someone do their tests for them so they could pass. They didn't even care about, you know, intellectual exams. So the question in a practical setting, that's why half of them, or 90% of them were bankrupt, right? After they leave, they have special classes saying, please, when you go on the road, don't get girls pregnant. Please save your money and have a financial advisor, because all these black athletes would leave the game, and even white athletes too, but they would, more black, they'd be fully broke. And drug addicts, you know, like Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden and other people, right? So the question is, civil society, is the dominant African-American male practical in a civilized society with intelligence and charisma and social skills?
The answer is, it's coming. The answer is actually yes, but it's going to have to be time. It takes time. As I've mentioned before, blacks were not allowed to learn. They were killed for learning how to read until 1954. So there is a learning curve that is most African American males or people or athletes are far behind, and you know, there's, so it's going to take time to be able to come up to snuff and learn that the financial rudiments of keeping, of taking care of your money, or how not to use your spare time to go to the clubs and get every girl you see pregnant. You know,
right.
You know, it's going to take time to understand those moral...
Unlearned behavior. Well, now here's a two-part question, though. The question is, over the next, let's take 3 generations or 4 generations, right? Because it takes time for things to filter down. Question is, for the African-American male to become smarter, successful, business wise, socially, to function well? Do they need three or four more generations of training, schooling, education, or do they need to breed within more white gene, more Euro, more Germanic, or Jewish, or whatever, Asian? Because the IQ levels of Asians are like 106, Ashkenazi Jews are 108, whites are about 100 or 98 or so, Hispanics are kind of lower 90s, and then down in Africa, have the certain groups, the IQ is 86. Now, we kind of touched on IQ. Yeah, they did a certain test, so the white kids are getting better education or teachers. But here's the question, because my question is it genetic? Because I can do comedy, right? But my brother genetically is smarter and quicker, and he makes me cry when he starts doing jokes. He makes me laugh so hard I cry. I used to try to compete with him. Now I set him up. I'm like Johnny Carson. I just ask the question, and he throws the line. And I can throw a funny in there, but the point is I can't compete head-to-head with him. I don't try because he's got a gift. It's genetic. I can't, it's like they say you can't teach fast. Like right now, if I go against a sprinter, a world-class sprinter, I can never learn to be that fast. You can't teach fast. That's why they recruit. Like Nebraska Cornhuskers, they used to lose every year in the 80s to Oklahoma and Texas and Florida, right? The Miami Hurricane used to beat their ass in the 80s. And someone said, you have too many white players. You're great for the linebackers and the quarterback. You need some black people for the receivers and the running backs. So they started recruiting from Texas and down south, Alabama, Florida, and then the Cornhuskers in the 90s were a powerhouse. That's what Tom Osborne did, and they called them the Cornvicks because here's the problem. It's like I am hip. And a couple of these, what was the guy's name? I forgot. He was in prison for murder, and he killed some. But what they did is Tom Osborne, I think he's governor now, or used to be. They called him Dr. Tom. He would lock up the guns that his black players had because they were out of state. And any crime they would commit, he'd kind of cover it up, like, okay, we're going to lock this one down. Like, hey, don't rape the girls anymore. Don't get drunk and drive your car on the weekend. And you can, you can get your scholarship and go pro. And they called them the Cornvicks. And they finally were able to beat the Hurricanes, in the 90s because they recruited black athletes who were criminals, thugs, basically. You remember Warren Sapp? Yeah. They had a guy. What's his name? He played for Detroit Lions. I forget his name, but he kept stepping on opponents' hands and trying to step on the face, even with the face guard on.
But he was African.
Cyanopolis or whatever, I forget.
He had a short name. Where'd he go?
I fell asleep in the tub.
And everywhere he would play, they reformed him so he'd be a good player. And then, in a close, tough game, the guy would be on the ground, and he'd walk by and try to step on their foot or try to put,
put his elbow in his
helmet.
His name is Sue.
Yes. In other words, he was a wild dog.
He still plays, but that's that's the superiority of the athlete. That's the superiority of in mind. When you teach a black person how to do something, they will succeed. That's what the fear
you,
is.
You can't teach white. Me tall or fast. It's genetic. So I'm asking the same question intellectually, cerebrally. And I'm talking like the wiring of, let's call the brain let's say that the Jewish, you know, Ashkenazi Jew brain in a sprint, their mind is wired to go, you know, 10-second flat, you know, 100 meter. And
right.
then let's say, you know, the Mexican brain is wired, just like genetics, to run a, you know, a 12-second, you know, 100 meter. And then you got, you know, the black, you know, mentally, I'm not trying to be racist. I'm average.
You're being very racist.
15 seconds, 100 meter. Can you genetically, what's going to change? You could get the answers
education.
To the mind reaction.
The answer is education. You're going to be able to teach, first of all, you can teach whites to be 9-second runners, but you have to train your lower body to be exceptionally strong. But they can run the 9.5s.
You can improve it 10-20%. Yeah, you can take me, say I'm a 13 or 12 second, you know, 100 meter, and knock me down to 11.5 or 12. But the point is, I don't have the genetics. I can't jump and grab the rim. Like, the closest I got was a couple inches from the rim, and now if I jump, I'm like, you know, probably a foot from the rim.
Right.
The point is,
right.
you can't teach 15-foot vertical like Shaq or Michael Jordan. Can't do it. That's what I'm saying. Intellectually, you can give them the answers,
they don't
and they'll go, oh, I got a better SAT. But I'm talking the mind, the synapses in the brain.
They don't have 15-foot verticals. They just are 6'6". But you can teach people to do almost anything as long as, first of all, they're young enough where they're flexible. But the main thing is you have to retrain their bodies. You have to make sure that their bodies are in a situation where they can actually improve on their spring, their flexibility, the ability to stretch. You can do that, and that will improve.
Yeah, but here's the problem. You've seen 5'6" players play ball, and there's a couple, right? And they put them in the game, and they've guarded, you know, like Jordan, and for like 5 minutes, like, okay, they can kind of hide it, but there's a certain point where you go, no, he can't keep up a full game with him. And there's one guy that won the slam dunk competition. He wore a little Superman outfit. Yeah, Spud Webb, but you know, that was, or you had Nate Archibald, you know, Tiny Archibald. You had a few players like that, but the point is they couldn't dominate. They couldn't score, you know, 30 points a night. They couldn't be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's the point of what I'm saying is that.
But they can score 30 points a night. They're just not
John,
as tall as Kareem.
How about Mike Bibby? He wasn't that
Mike
tall.
Mike Bibby.
And then Mickey Gorman started running marathons at age 40 and became national, almost international class.
You're missing the point. There's no superstar
there
Mexican
is. You're not
NBA.
Listening. You're not
There's
listening.
Mixed players. You have to mix the genes. I can never have an NBA player out of my loins unless I mix it with a 6'1",
you know,
African-American female.
John, that's what, for all these years, you keep talking that smack, and it's a lie. If you trained, like, so hard that you wouldn't believe, there would have been could have been a point where you could have been a decent NBA player or a sub at least. There are a lot of people.
I'm a good shot. I can take two steps inside from the half court and hit five in a row. I'm like a little Steph Curry when I'm hot. It's how we would start our summer games. I had a friend, Howard Russell. He was 6 foot, and he was white. And so we're two white guys, and we'd play white players and black players. Usually be a mix. You know, there's one brother and one, you know, white guy to pass them.
Good Lord, have mercy.
Are you guys letting some of that talk? Because I notice on the nights when we don't have a lot of callers that John and Don go into a vortex.
Well, Suzanne can tell us about her basketball career.
John, it's fallacious.
She already hung up.
I know.
She hung up because I was in the bathtub.
I was a good player. I could sit on the bench for a JV high school team. I decided I didn't want to sit on the bench.
John, did you guys let Suzette talk when I was in the bathtub?
If you listen to the tape, the show, I didn't talk for the first half hour or 45 minutes. I didn't say a word.
It's okay.
Go ahead and finish your points.
We've been on the air an hour. We're gonna close the show in 15, 20 minutes.
My brother's best friend growing up was Roy Joshua. He's 6'3", African-American, a phenomenal artist, funny guy, but he kind of acted white. But the point is, he was a brother, in and out. And I used to always make joke. I was like 4'6" growing up. And then when I got to high school, I was like, when I finally grew, sprouted, I was like 5'6". But when I was about 5'4", just before the final spurt, We always make fun of Roy, like, I can take you on. You know, glad I was a little hot shot. And one day he said, bring it, little man. And he wanted to humiliate me. And I couldn't score a point on him. I could barely dribble the ball because his arms, he could reach all the way around me. And I'm trying to, like, dribble it, like, 1 inch off the ground to go between his legs. And he, every basket, he'd take the ball and he'd dunk it. Or, you know, he'd hit five in a row from outside. And he was a bench player. There's no way in Dante's hell I could ever compete with him genetically. With 5'8", 5'10" guys, I would eat him alive.
Well, that's six five. You're missing it.
No, impossible.
If you stayed out at half court and shot that 2-step shot every time, you would have been able to beat him.
I found out that Suzette's call dropped and she couldn't call back in because I only scheduled the show for an hour.
Right, because of the three-point play
with Steph Curry before. I would have to shoot all my shots from half court,
and if I was a dead eye, I might make 50%.
But the point is, if they guard me out there, I'd have to shoot it from the other half court, from the free throw line on the other side.
Maybe you would. Or maybe you wouldn't. They wouldn't have guarded you. That's the point. They wouldn't have guarded you at half court every time.
The point is, any 6-foot player on any junior college could school me. And here's an interesting thing. There was a black man. There was a 6'3" black man in prison in the 70s who was averaging 40 to 50 points a game. And the Golden State Warriors, they had a white player named Jim Barnett. He was a good player. One night or two, he could score 30 or 40 points. But in general, he was a scrub guy, you know, kind of 10 points a game. And the prison system said, hey, this guy is so good, he should get a shot at the NBA, just or at least for his curiosity to know he could compete. And they brought Jim Barnett out there, to play, you know, one-on-one for like an hour in front of a scout just to see, did he have the potential? And Jim Barnett schooled him. And, you know, because he was a prison-level player. He never encountered NBA level. And he, at the end of the thing, he said, you know, I'm good among, you know, scrub players, but the NBA is a different, you know, there's high school elite, right? There's junior college, there's college, there's semi-pro, and there's pro, and there's elite pro. Those are all, each one's a different level. And this brings my point. Mentally and athletically, we're only talking about the top 2 or 3%.
I do have something to add to this conversation. Because there was a story in NPR the other day. So they did this story on this small area in Kenya, which was about the size of Rhode Island. And in one year alone, there were 32 East Kenyans who went under the two hours and 10 minute barrier for the marathon, which is like the ultra extreme top runners of the world. There's been like 60 runners in the history of the world that have gone under 2 hours and 10 minutes. And in 1 year alone, there were like 32 Kenyans that did it. So they were trying to figure out, was it, how do they train? What's the altitude? What do they eat? What's their diet? How can they run so fast? Or, you know, is it a ricochet effect, like the way they're training in other people? So they did this big study. So the point is, it would confirm John's theory that it's genetic. Like, you either have the ability or you don't. But then there's other people. So there was this one Kenyan in the 90s when the race was somewhere in South America, I think Brazil. So he was running the 1,500, the 5,000, and the 10,000 for the Olympics. And after the first race, he got a gallbladder infection, and the team doctor from Germany told him, you cannot run any more races in this Olympic or you will die. So he snuck out of the hospital and ran the 5,000 meters. And then he snuck out of the hospital again and ran the other race, the 10,000 meters, and won. And he beat a famous American named Jim Ryan twice. And he told the doctor, if I die, it's going to be on the track. I'm worth risking my life to win this race. And he went there and he ran and he didn't die. So I think the point is that in any great athlete, you have to A, be determined, and B, yes, you can have genetic skills. But I went from fifth on the team to fifth in the state in just 12 months. I went from like a plain old runner to an elite runner in 1 year. So it can be done. There's, like Don's trying to say, don't close out the gap of possibility.
And it sounds, the German doctor sounds just like John. It's like you see a black man, you think that he's going to be nothing, and then he turns out to be all that. All you have to do is train the mind. The black man. The
African was predicted to win, Don. He was neck and neck with a guy named Jim Ryan, and most of the critics favored the African. So in this case,
well,
he did get the.
But the doctor told him, don't or you'll die. That means that's the same kind of advice that was given to black men, black people all their lives and throughout history.
He was on death's door.
But
he was in a situation where his gallbladder could have exploded or something like that.
Well, the
bottom
line is that he did not take the doctor's advice. He ran the race, and that shows that modern medicine can be off, that it can be wrong. Our doctor was my wife. She, you know, he made a mixed diagnosis, and I can't completely say it was just an accident. I can't say that it was because he did not necessarily want to see a black person succeed without his advice.
His last name was Kino, and it was the 1968 Olympics in Mexico.
Yeah, Kipchoge Kino. Yeah.
Hold a minute, I got to turn the volume off.
His name was Kip Kino, and
yep.
He went ahead and beat Jim Ryan. Yes, I remember that very well. So, you know, but I can't say
and
that.
And they said that Jim Ryan had a kick like nobody else, like no one could beat him at the end, but that Kino guy, he was able to do it.
He wasn't able to do it. He whooped his ass. His kick was so much better than Jim Ryan's. It was unbelievable. But,
and it was the 1,500, and he started out in last place because he was sick. But he didn't give a shit. He was going to try anyway.
And it shows that the white man thinks they know everything, and there's a whole lot of things.
Oh, here we go.
Hey, that's what I'm saying.
We're going to wish Don well on his trip.
Yes.
And we're going to end the show now because I don't want to talk about blacks and whites hating each other anymore.
I didn't say anything about hate.
I know, but in this case, the doctor did care, Don. So you're being one-sided now.
I'm just giving an example of where whites are making mistakes, and they think they're infallible, but they're not. All right. That's my conclusion.
Okay, well, he didn't listen. He snuck out of the hospital, and he got glory.
Well, that's good.
And by the way, he's still alive because I saw a YouTube video on the side that showed him talking.
Well, Mexico City was problematic because of the altitude, and that's because they were afraid of the health. Also, there was the longest triple jump in history, or long jump. It was an all-time record. I think it was a Beeman or whatever that did the –
Yeah, Bob Beeman.
Couldn't for like 40 – I think it's still the record. For 40, 50, 60 years, the only record that just stands from that time period, he did a jump that everything was perfect, and there was all probably a little bit of altitude. But going back to Don's point, is it's potential. All I'm saying is, yeah, I could maybe train and maybe in the right circumstance made the pros, but my potential, if Kobe Bryant trained as much and as hard as I do, he will destroy me. And there's, that's just the potential. And what I'm saying, that's because it's that the 3% elite, I'm functionally better than 85% of most people athletically, but the elite level, that's another world I cannot approach. And so I'm just saying that applies physically. We know that applies physically in basketball and in football and boxing probably. Then why not academically, cerebrally? So you're admitting, oh, there's a physical difference in physical ability, but when it comes to the brain, which is physical, that mental ability.
Logically speaking, John, you probably are right, but there has been examples throughout history with people in individual sports who have come from nowhere and gained glory. And even my twin sister, who wasn't even she was in the top two in high school on our team, but she never placed at the state meet, and she ended up running I think it was a 450 mile when she was like 25. I clocked her one day. So people can go farther in life.
They can, but I'm just talking as a whole. I'm not talking of an exception. Jesus Christ is an exception. But the point being is how many world record holders in all those athletic events are 5'3" white girls? Not maybe a gymnast. That's a different skill set. And again, show me a 5'6" a superstar basketball player that averages 35 points a night. You don't have it. You can't give me an example. And show me a 65-year-old superstar, Michael Jordan, that's playing in the NBA. They can't. It's physically not possible. I'm only proposing the question, if this applies to physicality, why doesn't this apply to mental abilities? Because, again, the brain is a material substance.
But it does.
But, John, a lot of time I think that you subtly downgrade races. Like, I type in medical information all day. Like, there are so many Latino doctors in Florida, and mainly in highly populated regions. Like, there's a lot of people that have made it. It doesn't matter what color they were.
I know
a lot of African doctors in the U.S. that came over here.
There's the black astronaut
working in the software businesses.
I'm just saying, like I don't think you're exposed to the elite.
They have to get a chance.
You're missing the point. Tell me, what's the average IQ of an African American person?
I don't like this theory of yours. You want to know why? You've brought it up on the show numerous times.
IQ
is probably high among Africans.
It is.
Compared to Ashkenazi Jews.
There are doctors there, too.
IQ is natural intelligence. It's not something that
Do you know the mayor of New York City last week, Bill de Blasio, said we want to eliminate all special education gifted student awards. You know why? Because 75% of the winners were Asian and white. And you're basically saying give it to the dumb kids.
But what is your point?
Are you saying that?
Are you saying that these people cannot achieve?
What he was saying is we can't be join them. Like give these scholarships to dumber kids who aren't Asian or white because they're not. They can't. That's what he's. I'm not saying it. That's what he's saying, and that's the whole point of this thing. Is that
you sound so racist, John?
I just don't want.
I'm not racist.
Okay, then why am I looking at a figure where, where black people are in the lead on SATs?
Oh, really? For all scholarships going into college for based on SAT
scores? No,
score?
I can't bring that up right now. I'm just talking about basic. Like, it's pretty even among the races, but in one category, blacks are ahead.
Well, that's because they also dumb down some of the tests for them because they don't want them to look bad. You can also research that too.
So, are you trying to say black people are dumb?
I'm trying to. Oh, let me give you this. No, I'm saying as a whole, I'm saying that genetically, the facts are that certain races are physically stronger and taller, and that genetically certain races are smarter, and that's the science.
That's not it.
People try to debunk this, and they fail. I'm
not
saying this.
That's not it, you dumbass motherfucker. John.
I wouldn't mind you quoting these statistics if there was some kind of goal in mind.
Asians spend 10 hours a day in class. Whites have an opportunity to have tutors in their own homes. That's just like the athletic analogy you're giving. It's that the more time, the more practice, the better you get, the higher you score on tests, things like that. That's exactly what the point is. It's not about genetics being bringing people down. It's not all the time. Sometimes it does, but most of the time it's about practice.
Why don't we look at the lofty viewpoint that God gave each people different gifts? And if not, intelligence can't always be measured because there's also some really smart people that never go to college, no matter what race they are.
Have you ever met a person that's very sharp? They're quick wit. They can think of things instantly. They have total recall.
Yes.
Have you ever met someone who's very slow, who's like, could you repeat the question? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it. How do you spell
K-N-C-A-A?
Is it an A and then a T or a P?
Well, nobody's that stupid in this group.
Oh, you know what? I ran into that a week ago.
I went to college.
I'm going to bed in 3 minutes. You can keep talking if you want.
I went to college. Some of my best friends had instant recall, and they're great. They're great people. I got no problem with them. They were my best friends. I was called professor by my fellow college students at a prestigious Jesuit university. They called me professor because I knew my stuff, and that was because I studied. So there are, could have been a pro, John, if you would just.
But see, you're a Democrat. That lowers your IQ 20 points.
Oh, God. Here we go. Racist again. Racist again.
Not racist. That's politics. It's fact.
No. Democrats used to be Republicans back in the day, back in the Civil War. And that's what I'm going to go look at.
Anyway,
why don't you go to college, John?
Oh, because I at 13, they offered me special gifted classes, and I said, I'm not a material person. I'm a Christian.
Maybe
and
you should just go to learn.
Well, that's because I study a lot of stuff. But here's the point. I am a smart – on a chest – on a, I'm very smart.
I'm just saying, maybe you missed the boat on an opportunity because you didn't go to college.
On my college exam, I scored 100% on English. I scored 96% on the math. I was acing it. Yeah, mentally I'm a stud, but here's the thing. I wouldn't be a good lawyer. I know people on the spot, not only can they tear apart an argument and do a knockout punch with one line, they can also lie their way all the way through the thing. They can tell like a total truth and flip it upside down like politicians do and make it seem like the lie is the truth. And I don't have the ability to do it. I have to sit and think about it, write down notes, go over it, work really hard, kind of like Don probably. I'm a smart guy, but I am not at the elite level. And I'll admit it. It's genetic. It's like my brother's quicker, and there's other people that are, you know, whatever. I've seen people, Jewish and non-Jewish, who had such you just watch Jeopardy. Well, the guy who just ended, he won like, 43 in a row, whatever. Every subject, boom, he's just nailing it. He's just got this recall. I don't know how you fit so much information in your brain.
I don't mind. Can I just say one thing about you guys in this show? I've met a lot of people along the way. I could tell you hundreds of stories. Like my friend Ronak, who used to be well-to-do, and she was a Bangladeshi, and she was married to a wealthy guy, and then he left her for a younger woman, and she started from scratch. She was in the master's program with me in political science. She started from scratch, and she started a aromatherapy shop in the warehouse district of L.A., like in the swap meet area or whatever you want to call it, and, you know, just ordering oils and incense and building up her business with her stepson. And now she's doing really well, and it was a huge struggle. And, like, you have to rent space, you know, like in those indoor swap meet type places, and it was just, like, it was a crapshoot, and she was successful. And it didn't matter how many brains she had or what she went to college for, what her natural gifts were, or if she was bilingual. And then she ended up writing a book that got published in India, and she became well-known back in her home area. But all I'm saying is, like, people have all kinds of stories, so I feel like sometimes, John, you're trying to measure success and divide races. Like, see how good the Asian people do because they're disciplined and the black people aren't. Like, you're subtly trying to say that black people aren't successful in many ways. Maybe you're saying they're good at sports, but they suck at math. But, you know, I went to an all-black university, and I had a black professor in math. And I think there's good people in every area. There's Asians who can play tennis, and there's white people who can golf. I mean, like, why do we always have to pigeonhole people?
I'm not. You've spent half the show talking about going back and commiserating over slavery or ills from, like, 200 years ago, 400 years ago.
I don't. Don does.
And I talked about let's move forward, let's forget, let's go, let's just be successful, live the American dream. And then to that point, he starts going into, it's because blacks are superior. We're the alpha that is dominant, that will rise.
Well,
I don't like
that kind of talk from Don either.
But the fact of the matter is that
I'll just give you an example for myself. Like, between when Alexis was alive, 1 year I made $32. Stripping tobacco. Craig wouldn't let me work the year she was alive because she was sick. Now, the last 5 years, I've made over $56,000. I've made more money than I've ever made, and I'm 61. Maybe I'll have a booming business when I'm 70. Like, you guys can say what you want and share your opinion. I know what you're getting at, but we're all I'm not because I've barely been on the show, but I feel like sometimes all of us are a little too subjective. Like, we come from our own perspective too much and we don't look outside the box.
All I'm saying is if you think that a black professional basketball player when the league is 85% black is no different than a Mexican basketball player and there are no pure Mexicans in the NBA, you are ignorant. If you think that the top performing...
I'm not ignorant because also Mexicans hardly ever used to be in baseball, and now they dominate. I think, like, I've seen the Mexicans come up in the baseball world. Like, they used to probably be discriminated against, and they had good players, but then they were disciplined, and they became very good at the sport, and now they're all in there.
Well, I'm telling you that Mexicans and Hispanics act stupid. They generation to generation, the girls keep getting knocked up. The guys are dumb. They don't make smart decisions. They don't make decisions like Asians. They don't. The culture doesn't say, "Hey, educate yourself, start your own business, go and get ahead, live the dream." No, it's like, "Let's get on welfare. Let's knock up a girl, and she'll be a single parent." And the black culture does that too. So again, if you don't acknowledge that, you're being ignorant of reality.
Well, a lot of Mexicans do have their own business.
Oh, my God.
I knew five people in Pacoima who had their own construction business, and they were all Mexican. And even if they're poor Mexicans and pushing taco, those little silver carts around the street, they're still being entrepreneurs. They're not sitting on their ass at home waiting for a welfare check.
Well, 2/3 of African-American women are single moms waiting for their welfare check. So if you don't acknowledge that, again, you don't see reality.
How about all the black women who don't have kids? How do you know what they're doing?
Because they abort it. They like to kill babies.
No, I'm just saying, let's say there's a black woman who is in med school at Columbia University in New York, and she's not a statistic that you can find.
A T-star for studying window.
And there's white people who are on welfare.
But that's okay.
Absolutely. The majority are because the population of the country is 85% Asian Mexican or Mexican, of course.
Can you justify that the
okay, Don and John, you guys can wrap it up with you one. Thank you for calling. I'm going to bed with my sorry white self. I collected welfare from 1998 sporadically to 2005.
Right, but you're not included in what John's talking about because you're white, so you don't collect welfare.
Right, she has a degree and she works three jobs with a black boy baby.
I believe me, I know, and some of what both of you guys talk about is so fallacious as I mentioned earlier.
And her twin did the same thing, except her son goes to college with degrees, and I mean, like his SATs are through the roof. So if they both did the same, you know, twins did the same behavior, and one is going, you know, genius route, education, the other one.
I don't know.
I was 29. Yeah, well, I'm going to go to bed now, John.
You got to drive.
3 in the morning.
Yes.
So. Yeah, I will talk to you, and I'll be able to be on the show remote, so I'll be able to tell you what the slave sites and the Civil War battlegrounds are about, so that you'll know that I'm just there for the history and not because I want to dwell on anything. All right, it's the history. That's what I'm going to see. All right. Good night, everybody. Sweet dreams.
Okay. Okay.